This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the AIPIS show for accredited income property investment specialists and those who aspire to be. If you're a real estate, mortgage, or financial professional, this is the place for you. We'll explore innovative investment analysis, sales, marketing, and income-generating strategies for the most historically proven wealth creator, income property. Learn from the experts as they show you how to build a better business and a better life.
Hey, it's my pleasure to welcome one of our clients back to the show. We actually recorded another show a while back. We didn't air it yet because we kind of thought we could do it better. And he's just such a great contributor. He's been to several of our events. He's got 9 properties through our network. And that is Muthiah from Los Angeles. Muthiah, how are you?
I'm good, Jason. Thank you. How are you?
Well, welcome, welcome, and thank you so much for the preparation you did for this podcast interview. I think the information that you're going to share here is going to be very valuable to all of our other clients. So I just want to first say how much we appreciate that. I'll say that on behalf of my company, but I want to say that on behalf of all of our clients, because I just think what you did here is really, really valuable. I'm looking at the stuff you sent me in preparation for this interview. You, maybe more than any of our other clients, have really delved in to property management contracts. And what I believe is this outdated, outmoded, in many ways, dysfunctional model of property management. And as I say, you know, the two biggest challenges we have in our business is, well, right now, and this will change, it always does, it's a dynamic and ebb and flow, but lack of inventory of properties. So we really, inventory is very scarce, very tight for the past few years, seems to be getting worse, frankly, and property management. Those are the two biggest challenges we have. So if we can solve those, everything will just be rosy and wonderful. But Muthiah, what kind of caused you to get so interested in the property management part of the business, being an investor with 9 properties?
Well, the thing is, Jason, I have a habit of reading everything I sign.
So that's a good habit.
To my detriment, I do read all these property management contracts that I have to sign, and you know, there are things in there that, you know, don't seem like it. Look, anytime you know, I've signed a lot of leases over my time, and a lot of the leases and agreements, they always favor the person who's drafting it, and you know, all these agreements were drafted by attorneys on behalf of property management companies, and you know, as an investor, you know, I'm always looking out for myself, obviously, as an investor. And so there are things in there that I'm not really comfortable with. And, you know, half the time you go back and forth. And you know, the argument often from the property management company is, hey, look, you know, this is what everybody signs. And we can't change it just for you. You know, that type of thing. And so I've been able to change a few things, you know, here and there that seemed important to me. But, you know, certain things I don't really bother even, you know, negotiating, because it's not worth it in the long run. The big picture is, you know, the actual people.
Well, you gotta, as the old saying goes, you gotta pick your battles, right? So yeah, absolutely. But what I think ultimately needs to happen is I want to disrupt the property management industry. I want to see self-management become more popular, and certainly we have made a dent in that. It has become more popular as we've been teaching it for the last 6 or 7 years now. And I also want to see a la carte property management services. Why is it that most property managers out there expect you to just sign up with them and they do the whole kit and caboodle? Why can't you just buy the service you need, right? So those are two things that I want to see. And then the third thing is what I proposed maybe 4 years ago. God, I don't know. Time goes so fast. Maybe it was 5 years ago now, at our Meet the Masters event, which was this flat fee property management. And you did a beautiful spreadsheet on that I am looking at now. And we're going to talk about that, where the manager just charges a flat fee. And I think this is the way to go. I really like this plan. So where would you like to start, Muthiah, as we dive into this?
Well, we can start with, you know, like in any business, right? There are good property management companies and bad property management companies. And as an investor, you know, going into this, you know, and not everybody's, you know, an experienced investor. You know, most of us are just starting out. You know, I think that what do you look for in a property management company when you first get started? I think that would be a good place to start. And then maybe that, you know, from that, it can evolve into other areas.
Absolutely. Okay, good. Talk about that. You know, in terms of what you look for, you've got the what you call the property management company survey. And I just love this. You know, you've gone over, you know, several items like the lease up fee, the re-renting fee or the renewal fee, other fees, if any, you know, monthly management fees, pet fee and deposit, maintenance, advertising, late fees, rent due and credited, and, you know, statement of accounting of rents. Tell us about that.
Well, look, I broke these fees down based on the 9 different agreements, and I actually may have seen up to a dozen. You know, I looked at these and pulled out the different fees that these companies charge, and, you know, and so I figured that, you know, it'd be good to see what, you know, where the biggest chunk of your rent is going. You know, the biggest chunk of your rent is obviously going to the managing company, you know, the managing fee, which is really maybe not a whole lot, but 8 to 10%. But then you start, you know, nickel and diming with these, you know, other fees, and they don't want to share those fees.
I call those garbage fees. There's a bunch of garbage fees in there. But listen, folks, as I say that, don't think of it as too derogatory, because everything has garbage fees. You know, hotels are now doing resort fees, this fee, that fee. You know, these are all garbage fees. You know, they're all over the world. So, you know, it's not just managers doing that. But yeah, you know, they're not the apparent obvious fees, right? They're these extra things. They kind of slip in there, and a lot of people aren't really thinking about them. And Muthiah, before we dive into this, I'm actually sorry I didn't ask you about this before, but it's always nice to know where someone's coming from. You've got 9 properties now. What do you do for a living? And, you know, give us a little bit of your background first, just so we'll understand kind of how you think, maybe.
Right, sure. Well, look, you know, I mean, I'm actually a real estate broker. I've done some loans and things of that nature, but I started out as a broker. The way it all got started was I became a broker, and I went to get my fingerprints, and I couldn't find a place in downtown LA to get my fingerprints. I had to drive 15 miles to get my fingerprints. And I thought, well, wait a minute, this looks like there's a market. This was around 2008, around that time, where mortgage brokers are not doing that well. And so I said, wait a minute, it looks like this might be something that there might be a need, you know, and always when there's a need, you fill a need and you make some money. That's generally the, you know, the business concept where people make money. So I slowly got into, you know, setting up this business where I got certified through the FBI, the Department of Justice, bought the equipment, went through training, and then, you know, it just started. And then the mortgage brokering business fell off, and this picked up. So that's what happened. So I started run background checks in all 50 states. We do Department of Justice, the FBI, criminal background checks for, you know, for immigrants, for professional occupants, for professional licenses, lawyers, doctors, nurses, children, I mean, people who are come in contact with children, elders, you know, those types of things. So there's been a market for that. So I've been able, fortunate to make a living at that. And so I did that for a few years, and then I just started, you know, slow. I mean, I listened to your podcast, you know, I mean, I was looking at other things to do as well, and your podcast got me interested in investing, and I started very slowly, you know, and in a matter of 3 months, I bought 3 properties, and then slowly started picking up, and I've been doing properties. I basically refinanced my primary home, took the money out of that, and bought some properties, and then I used this conventional financing and, you know, bought other properties. So it was not an easy process, because the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac guidelines are so strict, and the requirements are so rigorous that it took me a while to close on the last 4 properties that I closed on, and I closed 4 before the end of last year, and so it became more and more difficult. And so, but in any event, that's what I did, and I intend to continue, you know, buying. But I'm looking at maybe doing something unconventional, maybe doing some seller financing, some lease options, that type of thing, rather than just going just with a conventional way of buying properties.
Yeah. Okay, good. So what else happened? First of all, on your business, did you open a fingerprinting business?
No. What I was going to say was, look, the way it works is, you know, and I don't know all the I don't know the specifics in terms of how they do the calculations, but when you have a business and you show a profit, and you know, I have an S corporation, so basically they take the profits added to your income and then just kind of, you know, escalate your income. But by the same token, if you have a loss, they basically offset your income against the loss. And so when you calculate your debt-to-income ratio, it really hurts you, and you're very tight in terms of qualifying for a loan. So that's what happened for me in 2015. The business that I was running had a little bit of a loss, you know, and so that affected my ability to borrow more money. And so that's why I kind of stopped it. Starting about four, and I'm looking at other ways of buying property right now. That's all.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Good. So on the property management agreement side, now that we got a little background, so that was great. Tell us, you know, what your thoughts are about this property manager survey, property management company survey. You're using this to really understand what you're getting into, right? That's the key to it.
Right, and I think it's also important for property managers to look at this survey, because I don't know if they've done an internal analysis on what their fee structure is, because they, you know, they've been doing this for a number of years. I don't think they've sat down and broken it down and said, hey, this is what we're charging for this, that, and the other. I think it allows them to look at all the fees they charge and make an informed decision on whether or not if it'd be worth their while to just charge a flat fee, you know, and everything is transparent. There's no hidden fees. You know, there are things like, you know, markup fees on maintenance. You know, if they, for example, it's become very common practice among the other many property management companies. If they call a maintenance person into your rental to fix something, then they would charge, you know, up to 30% on top of what the maintenance guy charges you. You know, I don't know how, you know, why that's even necessary, right?
I mean, I think the thing to do is to empower the tenant. You know, the property manager doesn't even know something is wrong until the tenant reports it. That's kind of the irony of this situation, is that if you just work with your tenant, now granted, you know, there are bad tenants out there, we all know that, but if you just kind of work with your tenant, a lot of times they can be your best ally. I mean, I get, you know, I try to get my tenants to, I was going to say I get, but I don't always get. I try to get my tenants to, you know, basically get into partnership with me here. And you know, you get some, there are some really great, most tenants are wonderful people. They're just people. They want to have a nice place to live, and they are our customers. You get some bad ones for sure now and then, but by and large, they're great. You know, so, okay, go through this survey a little bit more, you know, lease up fee, re-rent fees.
Right. I mean, these are the fees that I have, because, you know, I think people, you know, it's like mutual funds, right? I mean, they have all these hidden fees. I mean, if you sit down and break it down, you don't really know how. I mean, people just think they're just paying a flat fee, but there's all these. You know, Tony Robbins had a book, published a book not too long ago, where he had like 16 or 17 different fees that mutual fund companies charge, all hidden. You know, unless you really know what you're looking at, they're all hidden, and you just think that you're getting, this is your return. But within that return, there's so many hidden fees. So I'm just saying that, look, as an investor, if you're looking for your return on investment, you want to look at all the fees that you're charging and see if you're being charged and see if there's something you can, you know, negotiate before, you know, ahead of time, you know. And the part, you know, in addition to the fees, right, look, let me just go through the fees. Lease up fees, the fee that they normally charge when they find a new tenant for the property. Now, here's the thing. That can be as much as 100% of the first month's rent. So basically, you get nothing the first month's rent. You get nothing. The whole fee is gone when they find a tenant for you and the property is vacant. You know, I like to buy a property with a tenant in it, but that's a lease up. That's so you basically lost the whole first month's rent. The other thing is the re-rent fee. They find a new tenant for the property in the second year, then they charge you a fee. Again, that's another, it can go from 50 to 100%. Which is a pretty big chunk of money. You lose a whole year's worth of rent.
But sometimes, and here's the odd thing about it. Sometimes there's no renewal fee, or sometimes the renewal fee is $150 or $100. So it's all over the board. And here's the problem. This old-fashioned philosophy of property management is out of alignment. Whenever you get into a deal, you want to have a strong alignment of interest. The owner's interest is to get as much income out of the property as possible. The property's manager's interest is to make as much money as possible. Why can't we put these two things together? rather than having all these diverse motivations. So let me just tell you about that.
Right. And also, besides the owner and the management company, the tenant is the one that's paying us. So I think aligning the tenant's interest as well. You know, if you make it hard for the tenant to stay there, they're not going to stay there very long.
They're not going to stay. Yep, exactly. So here's what I was going to say about that. Some clients will say the property manager is not aggressive enough on rent increases. They tell me to just not raise the rent or to raise it a very small amount when I know I can get more. And they'll say, well, the property manager's being too lazy on getting me a higher yield. But then others will say, well, and they'll say that one of the reasons is they're lazy. They don't want to have to go replace the tenant if they decide to move when the renewal comes up, right? But then on the other side of that spectrum, you'll get a different client that says, well, you know, these property managers, they always tell you to really jack up the rent so that the tenant is incentivized to move, because if they move out, they can charge you another lease-up fee. Exactly. You can't win in this debate, right? Nobody knows really what the real motivation is, right?
Right,
we
exactly,
totally
yeah,
see
yeah,
that.
No, I know.
You see how it's the exact same set of circumstances and two completely different belief systems, right? So here's what has to happen. We have to have a flat fee system where you as the investor pay a higher percentage, but it's simple. It's totally flat. Every dollar that comes in, the property manager gets a certain defined percentage of that dollar. And if the dollar doesn't come in, they don't get anything. And then I believe there is an alignment of interest. That's why I proposed this idea about 4 years ago at Meet the Masters. And, nobody really took me up on it. I didn't really push it too hard. I have mentioned it on the show over the years, but let's talk about this spreadsheet a little bit. Okay, so we see from just what you haven't even gone over all of these 18 items yet. We see that there's a misalignment of interest, right? Let's see if we can get the interest aligned, okay? Tell us about your spreadsheet here.
Well, look, I took the, I took the three most common fees that are universal in all property management agreements. They were the management fee, the lease-up fee, and the property inspection fee. All the other fees exist to some extent or the other, but these three fees seem like they exist in all contracts. And I analyze them from 8%, assuming the management fees are 8%, 9%, 10%.
You know, on a $1,000 per month property.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Okay.
On a $1,000, just to make the numbers easy. So $1,000 a month. So if you do that, you know, the total fees on an 8% over 1 year, it's all annualized. So over 1 year, it's $1,710 for the 8%. It's the total of those three fees. On 9% is $1,830 and 10% is $1,950. But the annual rent is $12,000 throughout because you're getting $12,000 a month no matter which way you go. So as a percentage of the rent, you're paying anywhere between 14.25% to 16.25%. You know, that's what you're paying. You know, if you look at it, that's a sizable amount, right? I mean, if you're paying whatever people are paying in the
bank. I agree. And a lot of times this doesn't happen on the first year because the property will be pre-rented or they won't charge a lease-up fee for the first tenant. But then after that, you got to pay it, right?
Right.
And sometimes, to be fair, sometimes the tenant will stay for 2 or 3 years or heck, maybe even longer. Okay. And that brings that number as a percentage down quite a bit.
No, it does bring it down by 5 percentage points. It brings it down. So that's what I'm saying. If they don't charge the lease up fee or you buy a property with a tenant in it or if you already bought a property with a tenant in it, then there's no reason for a lease up fee because you're buying it as it is. And the second year, if the tenant continues to stay there, There's no lease-up fee. You know, maybe the renewal fee of $150, which is negligible. If you break it down over 12 months, is nothing. So you can take the same management fee as a percentage of rent, and you remove the lease-up fee from this equation, you get, you know, anywhere between 9 to 11 or 12%, and that's why I think that maybe it would be better if these, and that's one of the questions I have in my survey is, hey, you know, would you consider switching to a single flat percentage monthly, the property management fee, yes or no? If you answered yes, what is the percentage fee would be? What would be the percentage fee? And if you answer no, provide your reasons. See, if they look at this, right, I mean, they're basically making 9 and 10% anyway, and they're getting all these bickering going back and forth between the investor and the investor thinks, you know, there's no trust. The investor's got to trust the management company. I got to tell you something, Jason. There are a few companies in your network that I trust implicitly, and I don't have to do any work at all. They do a lot of the stuff for me. They find the best insurance for me. I mean, they do everything. So on the other hand, there are some others that I have to go out and shop for this, that, and the other, and I have to call them. You know, it takes more of my time. So the more value that a property management company can add to this relationship, it would be much better for all parties.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, this comes down to the old thing is that, you know, it's the question of thinking long-term in business or thinking for today. It's instant gratification versus long-term thinking. And, you know, just humans think differently about that. So I say the solution to this is, number one, you know, there are some options. Either self-manage your properties and learn how to do that. It's really, a lot of times, it's easier, frankly. If not self-manage, you can propose an a la carte property management relationship. The blend that I like is having your property manager do the lease up and handle things between tenants, but the rest of the year, just collect the rent directly. Just have them pay you. And then you've got that manager there. If you need a local contact, if you need some help, you can just call them up or, you know, email them and they can help you. And they're going to be happy to do that because they want to earn your business, right? Versus if they have you under contract, it's more like they've got you and they become complacent. You know, it's just human nature. That's just the way things are, okay? That's the way humans are. So when it's a transactional relationship rather than a contracted relationship, I say you get better service, which is odd because you pay less too.
Right. Well, one other thing I did want to mention before I forget is, you know, this thing, I don't know, maybe you can enlighten me on this. You know, the rent is due on the 1st, becomes late on the 5th, right? Generally, that's the thing.
And then you don't get it till the 20th.
Well, yeah. I mean, here's the thing.
Another benefit of self-management, you get your rent sooner.
You know, sometimes they don't credit your account until the following month. There's no reason for them to wait that long.
That's ridiculous.
That's
yeah.
a big
yeah.
float. That's Imagine ridiculous. Doing that over 100 properties. You know, you're collecting people's rent and then holding it, you know, and the pretext of saying, hey, you know what, there might be expenses, so we want to wait for all the expenses to be paid. Wait a minute, you already have $500 of minimum reserves that you're already holding.
In a market, if there were actual interest rates paid on savings, and, you know, this wasn't a trust account, I would accuse them of making money on the float. I can't do that now because there's no money to be made. But yes, in a normal world where we had normal interest rates, not these exceptionally low interest rates, that would be absolutely true. I think right now it's just custom or laziness. But it's ridiculous. If you self-manage, then you don't have that. You get the rent right away. My mom self-manages all her properties all across the country. None of them are local to her. She doesn't own any properties anywhere near where she lives. Okay. You know, some of her properties are 2,000 miles away from her. Okay. And she self-manages everything. Now, I think she does too much. I think she could do a nice hybrid arrangement where she wouldn't go out and do lease-ups. Frankly, she's retired. I think she just kind of wants something to do. Okay. And I've had her on the show talking about that. That's not very logical. Okay. So look at the third option. You know, remember, I was telling you three options. You know, there's really four. You can go into your typical property management relationship. And if you have a good property manager, it'll be great. Most of them are pretty good or mediocre-ish or mediocre to good. You know, they're on like the 70%, they're like C and above, right? Most property managers. But some are like, you know, C and D, and some are Fs. They're terrible, okay? You know, they're all over the board. So you if you get a good one, a traditional property manager arrangement is not going to be too bad, okay? It may be fine, okay? And I have some great ones, and I have traditional deals with them, and it's fine. Or the next step is you can have a hybrid arrangement, okay, where you pay a la carte for services, okay? The next one is you could completely self-manage your property. And the one we didn't mention, which is really what your spreadsheet is about, is you could do a flat fee arrangement with your manager where you actually pay them a higher percentage, but there's no garbage. They don't get to keep the late fees. They don't get to charge you renewal fees. They don't get to do any other fees, except you might pay them, say, 14% instead of 8 or 9%. And you might be thinking, well, that's crazy. Not really. Okay. You know, that could be a better deal. And even if the deal isn't better, you can't hear the dogs that don't bark. And here's what you can't hear. You can't hear that tenant becomes a happier tenant because they're not dealing with a property manager that's incentivized to be predatory and charge them late fees, or, you know, you as the investor aren't dealing with a property manager who's predatory and wants to ding you for a bunch of little miscellaneous fees, right? Everything is simple and aligned, and it's just a clean deal. And this is where the industry needs to go if it wants to survive. You know, one of the old, look at, you're sort of into the technology world, I know, Mathia. You know, one of the things we've really all realized in business the last few years is that successful companies are willing to take the risk of cannibalizing their own business before a disruptor does it to them. And you know, look, for example, if the taxis would have done that, if the music industry would have done that, okay, they wouldn't have suffered so much in the transition. You know, the taxis got killed by Lyft and Uber. The music industry got killed by Kazaa and what is it, Napster, okay? You know, they wouldn't have had that if they just were willing to disrupt their own business preemptively. And this is what the property management business has got to do. They need to disrupt and cannibalize their own business, and they will win. That's what I say. You agree?
They're sitting in a comfort zone. They don't want to get uncomfortable in doing something they're not used to doing. That's the problem. But honestly, if they look seriously at a long term relationship that they have with the investor, I think it would be in their best interest to move away from the model that they have right now, because it's not something that's I don't think it's sustainable given all the new technology and how, you know, I mean, you've done podcasts on, you know, keys, please, and other things where you don't really need these guys to do stuff for you. You know what I mean? You can like you say, maybe do a hybrid, you know, maybe use somebody for just leasing it out and somebody for maintaining it, you know, and then just the checks come to you. And there's no waiting 45 days to get the check. And it's just so many different things that people, once they get smarter about how to manage these properties. And I mean, you don't have to get rid of them. I'm not saying get rid of the property management companies, but I think using them in a more efficient manner. And I think once you do that, then the property managers become wise to the fact that maybe they should change their business model. That's my opinion.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is the hint. And, you know, look, I want to say, you mentioned mutual funds earlier, Mathia. And, you know, look, even though it sounds like we're griping and complaining about this stuff, which we are, okay, but, you know, we want to cause some change, okay? We really want to cause some change and disrupt this industry and be the forward-thinking people here. And I'm so glad that we have such intelligent, interesting clients that are so engaged. And Mathia, thank you for coming on the show and talking about it. But at the end of the day, this is a zillion times better than any Wall Street investment, any, you know, fund of sorts, or any pooled money investment, you know, invest in someone's private placement memorandum, their LLC. You know, they're always skimming the profits off the top there. At least here, if you read the contract, you know where the money's going, right? So it's not, it is transparent in that sense. But, when you gave the mutual fund example, I was thinking, Muthiah, you didn't even mention all the skimming that's going on at the level of the companies in which that mutual fund invests. So the mutual fund has all these hidden fees, right? But then there's a whole nother layer to the onion, and that's the graft and corruption of all the executives at the company in which they invest, right? They're paying themselves the big fat bonuses. They've got expense accounts. They're going on first class trips. They're going and wining, dining, and people, that's all your money, folks, paying for all that.
All the while your investment is just is tanking every day. Yeah, you're not earning anything. These guys are living high off the hog. I you know what, look, the thing is, in order for them to have that kind of to charge those fees, I mean, the problem is nothing is transparent. Most people are not educated enough to look through their statements and see what the fees. Most people don't even open the damn statements. That's the thing. You see, and all you got to do is open your statement. You see all the fees. You got to go through and read your stuff, and then you'll find out all these fees that you're getting charged. And most people just leave it to someone else to handle it, and then they cry afterwards about, hey, I'm losing money here.
Yeah, they do. They do. And so that's what I also want to tell people. This is not a new thing. I've said this many times before, but is at the beginning of the relationship with your property manager, and if you've already had the same manager for years, then, start today, okay? Really pay attention at the beginning and set the tone that you are an aware investor. Ask questions about this fee, about that expense, what is that, and get it all down so they know you are paying attention. They know you are an attentive investor who is aware and who is not going to be, overfeed, okay? So just set the tone. And if you haven't done that and you've had the same property manager for 3 years, then do it next month when you get your next statement, okay? And just set the tone for a while. Be courteous. Don't be rude. Don't be difficult. But make sure they get the message you are paying attention. Okay.
Right. Absolutely. No. And then, you need to know if they're spending your money, you need to know where they're spending it. And there's certain things I've tried to follow your philosophy of, hey, $250 per month per property. It's difficult to enforce that. A lot of them want $500, which is fine, but don't, you're going to spend, spend the investor's money, let them know where it's going. That's all. You can't argue with them for everything. Like you said, pick your battles, right? But if they're going to charge you all kinds of fees and which you didn't even agree to, I got my bank, my account was credited, with a 10% fee. And I said, wait a second, I just signed an agreement with you guys for 8%. What are you doing? Oh, I'm sorry, it was a mistake. We'll credit you the other 2%. So those kinds of things, you got to catch them, right? Otherwise, then you just think that, they're crediting you. Nobody's perfect, and it's all being done by human beings anyway. So, somebody might make a mathematical error or somebody might make an error. It's your money. If you want to, make sure it's done well, you either do it or hire a bookkeeper to do it. But, I don't know. Paying attention to the details, I think, is important.
Absolutely. Well, I think we covered it. And Muthiah, thank you so much for preparing this information. Really good stuff. On the positive side, what's next for you with your investments in your portfolio? Are you looking to buy in any more markets? Tell me.
Yes. No, I am, Jason. I am. I like new construction, only because they require less maintenance. I've got one in Ohio that I'm buying, one in Tennessee that I'm buying.
Yeah, you pay a premium for it, but it is more convenient. There's no question. Yeah. So you're buying in Ohio and Tennessee right now?
Right. Ohio and Tennessee. They're both new construction. They're going to be done in March or April. And then I think there's something that Carrie sent me saying something's coming up in Dallas. I'm going to look at that. But I don't want to go too far out. I've got four markets. I've got Tennessee, Ohio, Alabama, and Mississippi. So that's where I'm at. And, you know, I like kind of see myself.
Stop at five. Don't go more than five. Don't go more than five. Just double down in the same market now. Okay. Yeah, you know, this is one of the mistakes I made, and don't make the mistake I made. That's why, that's why you're here listening to, you know, you can learn. I spend the money and I make the mistake and you just get the lesson. Okay. So don't over diversify. Definitely do diversify. It's a commandment. Thou shalt diversify. One of my 10 commandments, but don't over diversify. So 3 to 5 markets are enough. That's enough diversification, not more than 5. Okay.
I mean, I'm still looking at, you know, every day I'm looking at different things that are coming up and looking at these deals and seeing what will work. And, you know, some, you know, I know the inventory is limited, but there's still some that are good. You know, I mean, I'm it's just a matter of looking and going through the stuff and, hopefully making the right decisions. You know, it's not all paper and gold. You know, I'm sure you make mistakes, and I'm sure I'll make them. I made mistakes, and I'll continue to make them. But you know, hopefully, at the end of the day, you know, it's these rental incomes will allow me to just retire. That's the objective of doing this, so that you know, we don't have to. We can do what we want when we want. And drive a Tesla when you want.
yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. Sure. Well, hey, Muthiah, thank you so much and happy investing to you. And we really appreciate you contributing to the show and sharing with everybody. And folks, insist on some of this stuff we talked about with your property managers. And let's move the needle on this. And let's get some new thinking into this industry. We have thousands of clients out there and way more listeners than that. We are a powerful group, folks. So let's move the needle. I have a dream. There you go. Not quite as inspiring as the original guy who said that, but you know, there we go. All right, Muthiah, thanks a lot. Happy investing.
Hey, thanks for having me on your show, Jason. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.